Among Alfred Hitchcock's greatest films, North by Northwest capped an extraordinary run of titles in the 1950s for the famed director. Eva Marie Saint played the female lead in the 1959 film, sharing the screen with two of the greatest leading men, Cary Grant and James Mason. Miss Saint epitomized Hitchcock's casting approach for female leads of the era, playing a cool, confident, and very blonde double agent, and the actress is still going strong today. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. We begin 2015 with a look back at one of my favorite Hitchcock films, North by Northwest, and one of my favorite interview guests, Academy Award-winning actress Eva Marie Saint. Today we re-air my conversation with Eva Marie Saint, recorded live on the stage of the Plaza Theater on August 2nd, 2012. I am the luckiest man alive right now.
You know, backstage, you know what he was doing?
I was holding her hand. I got to hold Eva Marie Saint's hand.
He was imitating Cary Grant. He was so good. And I want you to do that now. You can... Okay. Now you can do whatever you want. I don't know my lines.
You must have forgotten what Cary Grant sounds like.
That old.
Tell me, how did a girl like you get to be a girl like you?
You got the part.
And how did a girl like you get to be a girl like you?
What did I say?
I think just good, right?
We'll have to
and
see
the
movie.
No, naughty. Now, up to no good.
Now we can't turn them off. You're very good.
We skipped the love scene, though, that comes before that.
Oh, go ahead.
Seriously, how did a girl like you get into movies and become Eva Marie Saint? You, long before you were in film, had been acting in a number of different venues, stage, live television, and even before that, I think you were telling me that as a young girl, you come home from the movies and look at yourself in the mirror and pretend.
I guess my came from a family. My mom and dad really loved movies. And I grew up in Albany, New York. And we would go almost every Saturday night. And I don't know, my dad was a businessman, part Quaker, actually, very quiet, patient. And my mom was a teacher. And we would go to the movies. And I had a sister, and every Saturday night, just like you are tonight, there's nothing more fun than seeing a movie. And it's true. I realized that I would go home and go in my bedroom and close the door and look in the mirror and imitate what the leading lady had been doing. You couldn't do that now. It's too risque. But I said that. But I didn't. I was going to be a teacher like my mother, and then I changed my major in college from teaching to theater arts and theater actors.
And, of course, after all that live television and stage work, Elia Kazan put you in On the Waterfront. Oh. And your first Oscar and your first film. Well, you know, from 54, when On the Waterfront came out, you'd done a lot of really fine dramatic work. And then somewhere along the line, Hitchcock decides, I need to meet this woman. How did that come about, and what was that first Hitchcock meeting like? Because I think even he would agree, and you would agree, that the parts you'd been playing the previous few years were not Hitchcock women.
No, they weren't. An interesting thing, I was thinking this the other day, what did he see me in? Not On the Waterfront. You don't go from Edie to Eve Kendall. It isn't an obvious switch for an actress. But I think he might have seen me in a movie called That Certain Feeling, the first time I met you, with Bob Hope. Now, who did the costumes? Edith Head. And they were beautiful, and the hair was up, and the beautiful costumes, and the colors, the dresses. He might have seen me in that and thought, she could be a sexy spy lady. But we'll never know.
And Edith Head often worked with Hitchcock. In fact, she constantly was loaned out from Paramount to work with him later. But this was in a little in-between area where he had just left Paramount and he had gone to do a film for MGM, and I take it she was not involved in North by Northwest. Hitchcock himself took on some of the costuming duties for you.
He didn't design them.
No, but he went shopping.
Oh yes. That's. It sounded like he did the costumes. That's true. They made costumes were made at MGM. He didn't approve of them, and a few of them are still in the film. But he was in New York, and I was in L.A., and he said, "Avery, come to New York, and I'll take you to Berghoff Goodman, and we'll look at clothes." And I thought, ooh, that sounds fine to me. So we went, and we were sitting side by side, and the beautiful mannequins came by, the models, excuse me, and in beautiful, beautiful dresses. And he said, "Now, Avery, whatever you like, just tell me." I said, ooh. I said, "Ooh, I like that black dress with the red roses." And he said, "Wrap it up for Miss Saint." So from then on, I called him my sugar daddy. I've only had one. That was it.
He also worked on your hair, I believe. He decided
what
the hair
yes.
would look like. I mean, he with the whole package, he was fascinated.
The whole package, and he wasn't a director. It was not only the costume, the shoes, the color of the hose, the earrings, the hair, the makeup, the bracelet, the one little ruby she wears. And I loved it. I'm married to a director. He's very much involved in the leading lady, how she, the costumes, the clothes. And I find as an actress that is so important. You have no idea. You don't create the character and then just put on anything. It has to be part of that character. And he helped me slowly to think about this lady and what she wore and how she sat. And he was a director, mostly external things, not the inner part of the instrument of the actor. Completely different from Kazan.
When you originally received the script, I'm sure it was a bit of a shock because, you know, if you know the film, you don't come in until a good third, almost half the way into the film. That was a little concern for you, I'm guessing.
You know, they're going to ask for their money back if you tell them. No, I just had a baby, actually, and started climbing Mount Rushmore about 4 weeks later. It was my second baby. So I was just sort of lounging around the house, and the script was sent to me, and I read it and didn't quite understand some of it. I still don't. I was asking Chuck, why do we meet?
We're going to figure that out tonight for
okay.
you.
Okay, how do we meet on the train and why? But you'll figure it out. I never quite did.
But this was one of the most glamorous threesomes, I think, in all of the 50s. You have Cary Grant, yourself, mm-hmm. and, of course, the impeccable James Mason, two fairly classical actors who just kind of did their thing. And then you're an actor studio grad who is all about that internal working mm-hmm. it out. Obviously, you'd never been a double agent or a spy.
How do you know that?
I don't.
Smarty. He thinks he knows everything.
She's an actress, though. She is an actress of the first rank.
Thank you.
And it's fascinating to me to watch the film to see how well all of those styles of acting work together.
I mean, that's a fascinating aspect, because you're absolutely right. I don't think Cary Grant ever studied. I don't know about James Mason, did he?
He had a little bit, but not like Grant, who just kind of grew up perfect.
It's interesting because we were from all different schools of acting. At the Actors Studio, you're taught. I worked with Lee Strasberg at the studio. And part of that is to be able to work with any director, to work with a Kazan, to work with a Hitchcock. It's a very different experience. But I remember one day Lee saying, the actor is the instrument, and the director is the conductor. And it's your responsibility and your job to be able to do what the director wants. Now, Hitch wanted different things from Kazan. Kazan works from the inner feelings of the character. Hitch worked from the external. It didn't bother me because I was picking from what he said, what he did when he was with me, the costumes, all that attention, and that helped me create that character. But you should be able to walk on any set and feel comfortable because you're bringing to the director, to the other actors, what you want to bring to it and what you have worked on. My second film, my first film, Waterfront, was a closed set, quiet. Everybody, when Kazan had something to say to the actor, he would come up and whisper in your ear. Hitchcock didn't talk to the actors. He never talked about the scene, how we did, what we were doing. He had faith in us, and I think that's part of casting. You know, he could see us in our different roles, and that's what we were playing. And he never thought, that person needs help. But he did help us in a different ways. But it's true, we were all from different acting schools or not acting schools, but everybody brings their own thing. There's not one way of acting. Everybody has their way of doing it.
Well, you certainly had the most complex character in the film. I mean, Cary Grant is who we expect Cary Grant to be. James Mason is impeccable as the villain who never has to soil his hands because he has henchmen to deal with that, so he can just be suave and cool. But you have to play really three characters. You are the kept woman.
That was fun. Mm-hmm.
You are Eve Kendall, the woman who's falling in love with Cary Grant, and you are the professional who's working for the government.
Right.
And there's this conflict in you between your duty to your job and this romance that's budding with this guy who you may have to have killed.
And if I had thought of that, I never would have taken the part.
But you all have seen the film, and imagine this film without her and her character, and it doesn't work. I mean, it's just a chase film at that point. You are the part that this entire film rotates around and brings all the depth to it. Otherwise, it's literally just people chasing people all over the country. You make us care about the outcome. You're fascinating to watch scene after scene. I mean, what an entrance. I mean, it may be 60, 70 pages into the script, but that first scene with Cary Grant and you on the train, you know, even for 59, is pretty racy. You all are making love with one another with words and fully clothed in daylight on a train, but
I can't wait to see this film. If Hitch had explained it to me in person, I would have said, yeah, right. I would have said to my husband, gee, I come in page 60. And then he read it, and then, of course, he said, honey, find a spot, sit down, and reread this script, because it's incredible.
Well, and, of course, it's your beauty and your allure, your sexual allure in the film, that the men can't see past. They're blinded to it, both Cary and James Mason. And I think, to a certain extent, the audience, because Hitch draws out for us just who you really are. We're perfectly fine thinking this is a woman who just picked up Cary Grant on the train for a while until she sends him off to his doom in a cornfield.
Mm-hmm. Gets better and better. As a matter of fact, I wasn't in that scene of Bakersfield with the airplane coming down, and I still have the telegram. Oh, yeah, it was that long ago. A telegram, can you imagine? And it's yellow, which they were anyway, but it's more yellow now. But it's from Hitch and Cary Grant saying, we miss you. I was glad I wasn't there. It was hotter than El Paso, they say.
I have to ask you about the kiss, one of the greatest kisses in all screendom. You finally lure Cary Grant back to your apartment on the train, and there is a quintessential Hitchcockian kiss and interlude that happens, and because of the censors, he tended to draw his kisses out, where you're constantly breaking the kiss and coming back to the kiss, but you two are rotating in the frame in place in this tiny compartment.
Do you know why we're rotating?
Tell us.
I was sure you don't know why.
Would you like me to tell you?
No, it's because it's the train. See, the train is moving. So you know how trains move back and forth. So
it's very sexual.
Yes, very sensual, so very suggestive, and we're moving around. There was a still man, a man taking photos of what was happening on the set, and he was on a ladder. He got so involved watching the kiss, he fell off the ladder. And we had to do it again.
And was that hard? I can imagine there was a camera right in your place. With Hitch, you probably had to turn just so, and your hand had to be just so, and you're, and you've got this tiny bit of three-dimensional space to do that. And it's fascinating.
But once we started, he never broke that. It was up to us to, you know, where my hand was, or, you know, he just didn't direct. He had a storyboard. He knew exactly where we would all be sitting for every scene. He didn't do. He didn't give the actors much emotional direction, but he would tell. You know, if this were the scene, you would be sitting there, Chuck. I would be sitting here, and he would tell us, "You sit here, I sit here. I don't care where I sit. Just tell me where to sit, and I'll be the sexy spy lady." But he had every frame in mind. So when you see the film, there was very little editing, because in his mind, he knew exactly what he was doing. I've never worked with anyone quite like that.
And what's fascinating, we were talking about this the other day, that for someone who was so controlling about every other aspect of the film, the fact that he chose his actors and then let them do what they do.
Yes, I guess he watched our work, our respective work, and he just could nose in on. The first meeting was at his house, he and Alma, his wonderful wife, who was always there with Hitch, and such a bright, wonderful lady. And it was a luncheon, and I went, and I called my mother, and they weren't really involved in show business. And I said, but I'm having an interview, meeting with Mr. Hitchcock, and she had just read something in a magazine. And she said, oh, honey, he loves blondes in beige. And he loves women to wear white gloves. Well, this is not 1843, but it was 19. We did wear gloves in New York. I still have a drawer full of white gloves. And I had white gloves, and I had a beige dress. So I wore the beige dress. I wore the white gloves to lunch, and I got the part. And I... Woo.
The Hitchcock woman.
And I called my mom, and I said, oh, Mom, thanks. Oh, honey, it was nothing. I just read it somewhere.
I want to ask you about one of the other actors who has a small role, but a fascinating role, your friend Martin Landau, who
yes.
plays one of James Mason's henchmen, his right-hand man, who throughout the film is the first man who really sort of suspects you're not who you think you are.
Well, he was smarter than Cary Grant, wasn't he? And that's an interesting thing, because he was very jealous of Eve Kendall. So I didn't think of it at the time, but there's this kind of innuendo of homosexuality between him and James Mason. I didn't hear it discussed on the set, didn't think about it, but now it has comes out, and it's really interesting if you watch the movie with that in mind.
And I had spoken with Martin Landau about 5 years ago about that, and he had mentioned to me that when he was originally reading that script for this another small part that he was working on, the question that came to him was, why does this character not like her so much when all the other men in the seem to be under her charm? And of course, for him, the answer was because he's in love with James Mason.
Yes.
And he's jealous. And of course, Ernest Lehman, another friend of yours, wrote some great lines for Martin Landau that just hinted that. And I think it goes to the way Hitchcock liked to constantly push censorship in his films. He was always pushing the boundaries.
Do you want to imitate James Mason now? I bet you know all the lines.
Why, Leonard.
I knew it.
You're jealous.
So where were we, Chuck?
It's a great line, and you have some other lines that you had to loop towards the end of the film, too, because of censorship. And there's, of course, the final image of the film, which I gather you didn't know the film was going to end that way until you were at the premiere.
Well, when you're not in the scene, you don't really see the other scenes until you see the film at an opening and screening for the first time. So there is the ending of the scene, and I was with my husband at the opening. And just before that last scene, Cary Grant pulls me up in the berth on the train. And so at the very last, you see the train go through the tunnel. So I said to my husband, I said, that's a little Freudian, isn't it? And he said, you got it, honey, you got it.
The film is filled with so many iconic moments. Of course, you and Cary Grant racing around Mount Rushmore. What do you remember the first day you entered the soundstage and they had built this giant Mount Rushmore?
I don't have vertigo or anything, but I thought, oh my God, what are we going to do up there? And how are we going to get up? I walked on the set, and oh my God, I've got to climb it. If Cary Grant, he was older, I thought, if he can do it, I can do it. And so we went up there, and I had heels on. No one thought, why would she climb in heels? So during the scene, I take my shoes off. I don't even call down and say, Hitch, can I take my shoes off? It's not working. I didn't do that. I just took them off, and then I just threw off my Ferragamo shoes off Mount Rushmore. Well, there's a point where I slipped down the mountain, and there was a young man who was supposed to catch me at the bottom of my feet off camera. He was distracted. Something. He didn't catch me. So I slid about 2 feet more than I should, and you'll watch me going like this. I still have the scar right there. But it hurt, and I didn't care who saw. I didn't think, and I guess if I had, I thought, well, Hitch will take this out of the film.
Do you ever think about your films that still, you know, we love and are some of the great classics, and why they persevere in our culture?
I think of film, well, the two films, this and Waterfront, because they're about the story is everything. The people, the story, the interaction, the feelings, it's our lives. And it's on screen, and we can relate to it. Now, I don't want to be an old fuddy-duddy, but there are a lot of films I don't see now because of the effects, and that's for the younger people. But what I love to see, the younger people coming here and seeing the older classics, and I think that's wonderful. It's the story. And Hitch, for instance, he has his camera, and it isn't just the motion. It's the dialogue. It's what people are saying. And his idea of scaring people was not when the car goes through the window, crashes, or somebody, well, shoots somebody or something like that. It's leading up to that, the suspense of on that Mount Rushmore, and then what happens. And he was a genius at that, and some people try to copy it. They just don't quite get away with it.
And nobody gets away with a role like Eve Kendall. So we are so blessed to have you on the stage of the Plaza Theater tonight.
Thank you, and I hope you enjoy the film.
Eva Marie Saint.
Cary Grant, right?
You've been listening to my stage conversation with actress Eva Marie Saint, recorded live on the stage of the Plaza Theater on August 2, 2012, before a screening of Alfred Hitchcock's masterpiece, North by Northwest.
Miss Saint is still as beautiful and confident as she was on screen in 1959 and is still acting at the age of 90. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.